Hi, it's Dave. This is part two of three parts from my conversation with Zach and Jesse Cataldo. They run a YouTube channel called Now You Know about Tesla and renewable energy. Recently, Zach shared a video on his channel predicting that Tesla will stop selling cars to the public in the future in order to focus on the robotaxi network. In this video, we discussed this issue from various angles, and though we ultimately disagreed on many things, we did agree that robotaxis have huge potential and will disrupt transportation.
And what I'd like to get to, though, is I would like to skip this conversation almost because we're talking about car ownership, and that is almost done. We're almost done with that era. And so even we oftentimes are thinking about car ownership. But if we're right, and this is kind of where we really do have a split, there's plenty of people who think Elon will never pull this off or no one will pull it off and there won't be self-driving cars. But if there are, and I can imagine that that is true, especially seeing what the full self-driving beta release can do now, if it's true that we're going to have self-driving cars, then I posit that there will not be car ownership soon, which changes so many things that we can't wrap our head around because we're Americans and we're like, it's a God-given right to have a car. But if you don't have a car, that means that we don't need so many of them, which is a huge change. Yeah. Because one thing people always say is, well, how is Tesla ever going to make enough? 95% of the time, your car is just sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
once we go to the robo network, we don't need so many.
Mm-hmm. For those watching, Zach and Jesse did a great video on why Tesla won't be selling cars in the future to the public after Robotaxi Network gets up. Great video. I actually wanted to dig a bit deeper into that because I thought, you know, there's definitely some interesting things that you put forth there. I'm curious, what's your timeline? When, like, in terms of, like, what year do you think... Let's actually hash some of this stuff out. What year do you think Tesla will launch their Robotaxi Network? What year do you think Tesla will stop selling vehicles to the public? And around what year do you think people just in general, half or more of the people in the world just won't own cars anymore?
So, well, we know that they're going to be making a robotaxi soon. They leaked it at Battery Day, a covered car, $25,000. And I think they might start selling it, as in you could buy one. I think that they're going to kind of work their way up the food chain of stopping the sales of cars. So I think that they would start with that robotaxi. And if we're talking year, I think
2 years is plausible for them to have one city in America where this rolls out. So a city like San Francisco, which is right now, you know, allowing autonomous cars to drive in.
Right.
And so let's just say that the robotaxi software and hardware is ready and that San Francisco would allow some kind of test of, say, 1,000 cars or something. I can imagine that rolling out. And I can imagine if that works, if it's safe enough and the regulators are happy, that it starts ramping up and that other cities start competing to actually get the technology in their cities. And this is where I think a lot of people would disagree with me and say, no, regulators, Zach, they're slow moving, governments are slow. I think that municipal governments and state governments are not as slow as we think. And I think that if there's going to be a disadvantage to your city to not have this, then you will actually move pretty quickly as a mayor or city council or whatever to get it. So I think it's plausible that in 2 or 3 years, we have a couple American cities with the robotaxi network operating.
Right. It's going to be like Uber. I mean, Uber came in very quickly. Everyone was super surprised, most of all, you know, taxi drivers. I think that it's – and I think that the hype also of Uber, for instance, was like super big. People were totally into it. They were like, awesome, cheaper taxis, I can get around. It became – it fell right into the culture. You know, people were just like, you know, oh, the one night stand and then you get an Uber.
But remember the two backlashes against Uber. One is, well, they're both related around the driver. One is that the driver could be a bad person, right? And so you could be hurt by the driver. The second is that the drivers weren't paid much. And so there was a backlash of like, Uber, you're just kind of taking advantage of all these people. Those two things don't happen with the robotaxi network because there's no driver. So
you have the backlash of Uber drivers taxi drivers, which, you know, taxi drivers are throwing bricks at Ubers. So totally not going to be the cleanest thing in the world. But these are going to be people's cars to begin with. Totally. I think that these are going to be Model Ys and Model 3s, maybe even S's and X's that are owned by other people, which is not that different from Uber aside from the fact that they won't have a driver. I think that right around the time that this starts ramping up, Tesla is going to start ramping up production of the Robotaxi. And so I think within a few years of that, a couple, probably one or two, we'll start to see this Robotaxi, which Tesla still might be selling to people. You might be able to buy a Robotaxi for $25,000.
But to get it on the network, I think the cost of full self-driving, which today is $10,000, I think will be, Elon has said 100,000 in that range. I think that when they turn on the network, it's got to be at least $30,000 to $50,000 for the full self-driving option.
Right. And I think that one of the things that Tesla could kind of do would be to leverage people buying the cars as a way to offset the cost of manufacturing the car, because someone will buy it outright. Obviously, they will be financing it most likely, and then they might not be able to afford full self-driving in its entirety. Which kind of, if Tesla were to sell the Robotaxi at 25,000 and full self-driving at whatever price they set, that totally makes money for Tesla. But I still think that they'd be making a percentage off of
Right, they would.
the ride sharing. So they would say, we're taking a 30% cut or whatever cut they want. However, if the person can't afford full self-driving, they could still buy the monthly option, which is going to be more expensive for them in the long run. But what are they going to do? They can't afford it. Maybe they can finance that if they really wanted to. But Tesla's going to have their cake no matter what.
And this is the next part, which, I mean, that's already hard enough for most people to stomach, right? This vision, especially so quickly. But here's where I really do think that probably you had asked, when will this happen? I think in about 10 years, Elon's going to shut off selling cars to you because it'll make more sense to keep them for themselves and
Right.
just have the Robotaxi network.
It's tough because it's an investment for Tesla to make, right? They're not going to make all the money back the first year. And so, kind of like with SolarCity, although a little bit better, like when Tesla acquired SolarCity, they stopped doing as many of the power purchase agreements, even though they were able to bundle those. A lot of people didn't like the math on that, and kind of didn't value Tesla or SolarCity very well because of those power purchase agreements, because they had so much cash that kind of wasn't in hand, even though it would be coming back to them. Sun rises every day. But with the robotaxis, I think that they would want to start out with, selling the car, doing that. And the people who would be doing this wouldn't be seeing that much of a return. I think that they would just be eking by, but they're not working, right? It's a passive income in like the most total sense. They made a small investment maybe, or not. Like, it might just be making them money. Maybe not a lot of money, but it might be making them money. And I think that Tesla can kind of get the risk off their plate. But then, at a certain point, why cut these people in? And Tesla, as soon as they can start to afford making robotaxis themselves, which I think that they could very quickly if they wanted to.
Right, because while this is going on, other car companies are going out of business. I mean, this is the other part of the equation that, again, people don't like to hear. But Ford, GM, Toyota, Honda, there's no path that I can see that keeps them in business. They're making something that's just completely obsolete already, and it's just going to be more obsolete going forward. So, and none of us could believe that, Kodak and Polaroid and Blockbuster and all these companies would go out of business either. They were the market leaders. But as soon as Netflix comes along, or something else comes along, boom, they're toast. And I think that's what's going to happen, which frees up a lot of factories, frees up a lot of robots, it frees up a lot of capital that Elon can swoop in and, either put into his factories or reutilize his factories. So it could speed up how many Teslas they can make.
All right, so I want to unpack this a bit because you guys, made some very interesting and I'll just say
Bombastic claims, yes. They're hard to spell.
I didn't say
Hard
that. I didn't say
to
that. So, I mean, for sake of discussion, let's say, okay, hypothetically, Tesla does release their robotaxi network in a few cities within 2 or 3 years. They make the robotaxi, let's say in 3 or 4 years, and the networks are growing. These robotaxi networks are growing, and in urban areas, especially in other places. The jump I want to kind of explore is this jump 10 years down the road, you're saying, where Tesla will likely stop selling cars to the public. I think there's a few holes in that kind of a conclusion. So the first is kind of this concept of ownership of a car and the variety of use cases, like let's say of a car. And I think like a lot of times in urban settings or people closer to cities, like the closer you are to a city, the less owning a car makes sense, you know, because parking is hard. It's just traffic is tough. It's just everything is, there's so many negatives about a car in some ways. And that's why Uber and Lyft and et cetera, they do very well in these urban settings. But the further you go out from the urban settings, the less appealing a ride-sharing car is. Because, for example, you know, I'm running a farm. I need to put stuff in my truck, you know? Or let's say a suburban mom or dad, they have two kids. Like, I have two kids, and we have our car seats in our car. And I'm not going to want to get a ride-sharing car because I don't know what I'm going to do with my car seats, or maybe they have car seats, but I don't even know what kind of car seats they have, you know? And then I have a ton of stuff that I keep in my car too. Like an avid golfer might want to keep their golfers. Some avid sports person might want to keep their rollerblades and their beach ball and their basketball and their gym equipment. And there's a ton of use cases for a car where it's kind of like, even if the ride sharing network was practically instant, within a minute, you could still get a car. Regardless of that, I think there's, and we can debate on whether this population is 1% or 50% or higher, but there's still a group of people that will buy a car, and it might be considered a luxury item because it's obviously more expensive than, let's say, ride share network, et cetera, but they will gladly buy a car because of the extra benefits that that car gives them, right? The extra optionality.
So first of all, I think that Tesla, when we say that they're not going to sell you a car, they're not going to sell you their most affordable car. So maybe they'll keep selling the Model 3 performance or long range. Maybe they'll keep selling the Model Y. Maybe they'll keep selling only the S and X. Maybe just the Roadster. I think that they will probably, again, move up the food chain as to which cars they're going to stop selling.
Okay. On that thought, though, like think about it. If there's a group of people apart from the city, let's say in suburbs / even rural areas, that really need a car, right? And they want a car to haul stuff, to carry stuff, to put stuff in, to leave it in the car basically at all times. Why would Tesla pull out the rug of their most affordable cars so that these people won't have access to affordable cars? Don't you think it's in Tesla's ethos and mission to allow these people without the highest incomes in the world, let's say, to be able to afford a compelling electric vehicle, and for Tesla to offer one of their, you know, good, cheaper vehicles?
So I think there's a couple solutions to this problem. So first of all, I think that the reach of these taxi networks is going to extend further out of the cities than most people would imagine. Because right now, to have an Uber function, you need a concentration of drivers and a concentration of users. And so the cities is perfect because the drivers will all flock to the cities because that's where the most users are. When the network can become autonomous, it doesn't cost you anything to have the car sitting around doing nothing. And in fact, the car doesn't have to be doing nothing. The car could be connected to V2G, and it could be balancing the grid, which could be making money,
right?
Just having the car sitting idle. So you can have it parked in the middle of nowhere. You wouldn't want it in the middle of nowhere, but let's say in the middle of a suburb. I say, oh, I need to get somewhere. 5 minutes later, the car shows up. I think that that will extend the range of a ride-hailing network a lot further than most people can imagine, and that's going to encompass a huge segment of the population, the suburbs. I think that it will be able to reach the suburbs.
Yeah, because I mean, a big part of our conjecture here is V2G and VPP, so vehicle to grid and virtual power plants. And right now, if you just look at a car as a means of transportation, you're missing a big piece of it, which is that it's this big mobile battery. It's 75 kilowatts or 100 kilowatt hours of battery. And being able to control that robotically, put it on and off the grid whenever you want to, means that it has a whole new value to it. We've actually valued it at like $36,000 over a 3-year period, just on kind of today's rates. So it has a whole new value, like Jesse's saying. You can go park it and just have it sit there, whereas a driver would never do that. And so it is hard right now. We're trying to picture an Uber network working in a suburb or a rural area, but this without the driver actually does work in those
And
areas.
so then to get to your point about the car seats, it's like, yeah, of course, you're going to want car seats. So let's have some cars that have built-in car seats. Maybe they're twice as safe because they're not strapped in with a seat belt or even, just two connection points down at the base. Maybe it's built into the car. Maybe, and maybe, when you want to send your kids off to soccer practice, you don't have to get in the car and drive them to soccer practice. The car comes and picks them up and drops them off and can go pick them up and drive them home. So all the stress that is on so many people's families can be alleviated. It would almost, in some ways, be more convenient to not have to have the soccer mom minivan, but instead, oh, the kids can do whatever they want from school because they can just call a car. And obviously, there could come with restrictions of like, you can only go home. It will pick you up from wherever like a lot of parents, just call me whenever you want. I will come get you. That's like the speech that they give. That's on their little app thing because all these kids have cell phones. So it could come and pick them up and drive them home.
And to your point about safety,
Or you could schedule it. I mean,
so right now, we don't really think of one car being safer than another, other than like a Volvo or something. But once we've proven that the robotaxi network is not only safer in a crash, but less likely to get into a crash, it's going to be something where it's like, do I not want my family to be in that? And so you said, you'll still want to buy a car. Will you? Because the economics, let's talk about that. If you buy a car now, there's insurance and maintenance and all these different things that won't exist with the robotaxi network. And so maybe you'll want a car, but can you afford a car? If not owning a car means that you can have all this extra income for something else, it will be a luxury to own that car. And so we're not saying there won't be car ownership. It's just that it'll become less and less appealing.
Okay, so let's dissect some of these points here. So first on vehicle to grid, I've also done the analysis and it's great. I'm a big believer in vehicle to grid, virtual power plants. But the thing is, if you own a Tesla, you can still be part of that vehicle to grid, income generating possibility. So it's not necessarily like, I think the strongest argument that it's going to eliminate one of the reasons why it'll eliminate car ownership in a sense, right? The second thing is about, let's say, the soccer mom. Like, I think, like, because I know a ton of, let's say, parents with kids and with young kids, there is no way you're going to pry a car out of their hands. Like, and the reason is, well, go ahead.
You would have said the same thing about a horse back in the
Now,
1900s. But
yeah.
I mean, it's just like, because you can't picture what this new reality will look like. None of us can yet. But like, I think there's going to be so many, you're looking at all the problems, like, right, the car seats, right, or things like that.
Well,
But
okay,
you're not.
let me explain a little bit more because if it's like one problem of car seats, it could be fixed or solved, right? But for example, and here, okay, let me, this other point I'm going to make is if in the future car ownership drastically increases, let's say 5 or 10 times higher than it is right now, the cost to own a car, then I would say your argument actually is compelling in a sense. But if the cost to own a car actually stays relatively the same or it rises slightly with inflation, but yet the cost to, let's say, drive a robotaxi or get a ride in a robotaxi goes down by 10 times, that's not that compelling. Meaning, there's a proven economic use case where people are willing to pay a certain number of dollars to own a car and for transportation. Let's say it's $500 a month. Let's say,
But
but let's
only
say,
because you have no other choice.
actually, I would disagree with that. And let's say, hypothetically, let's say the cost to drive around goes down to $50 a month, right? So you could either own a car for $500 a month or get around in the robotaxi network for $50 a month. See, what the economics have proven to this point is that there's a large portion of the population that is willing to pay that $500 right now. I'm not going to say that all of them will keep that car in the future if they have a $50 option. But just because there's a $50 option and people flock to that $50 option, it doesn't mean that this $500 option becomes like a $5,000 option. If it remains a $500 a month option, and if they're accruing certain benefits that the robotaxi network can't give them, right? That group of people will remain car owners. And so take a step, a few steps forward, which is, it's not just car seats. It's like, I mean, these parents with like young kids, and this is one portion, there's other portions of the population, but it's like, for example, in my Model 3 right now, I have a stroller, a portable stroller I keep in the frunk, right? And I need it because, you know, maybe I need to take out the stroller for sometime for the kid. You know, I want it there. I have like a diaper bag in the trunk, but I have extra stuff that it's not like I carry around all the time, you know, just for emergencies. I might have an extra change of clothes I keep in the trunk for my kids in case something happens. I have like some sports equipment in case, you know, somewhere I might need to bring out something. I have like kids' toys in the back seat, right, that to keep them occupied. I have a certain type of car seat that I want. Like, I don't want a different car seat. I have a specific car seat that I think is the safest brand out there. There are like about 10 to 20 different things in the Model 3 right now that, like, even if I had a robotaxi that can get me around for $50 a month and still can get to me in 1 minute, it still would be massively inconvenient for me as a parent.
Okay, so here's the thing. I just want to ask you, if we go back to 1910 and there's a million reasons why you love your horse, you just love your horse. You can't picture a day without your horse. It's mm-hmm. your best friend. But along comes the day when the car takes over. What do you do? Now, are you still taking your horse into town?
But I understand you have
let's go to this one and we'll go back here. See, that horse car analogy doesn't really apply in this situation, because if I buy a autonomous driving Tesla and I own that Tesla, I get the full benefit and technology benefits of that Tesla and the autonomous driving. So I'm not driving a horse anymore. I'm driving the top of the top. Right? There's no disadvantage. I'm not trying to keep a horse. I'm trying to drive an autonomous driving Tesla.
I'm saying you would not be able to afford it.
But also, if you went back to 1910 or whatever, you love your horse. The argument you just gave for not wanting to switch to a car are similar arguments you have about your horse. It's a part of the family.
It's not
a similar argument. It's because I'm saying I want the autonomous driving, right, Tesla. I don't want to drive. I want the car to drive myself. It's just the robotaxi is actually a worse product for me than my own car, where I can store a bunch of stuff.
I think the point we're missing is Tesla won't want to sell it to you.
And that's where I disagree as well. But Jesse, I want to hear what you have to say as well.
So, I mean, I think that there are lots of different creative solutions to a lot of the different problems you brought up. Probably not all of them.
Robo-lockers.
But I mean, there are people who right now have children and don't have a car. And they go through life either on public transportation or also rely on either ride hailing or taxis or walking or biking around. And they do make stuff work. So it is possible. There are a lot of reasons why you especially would want a car, especially right now. And you found a lot of reasons to enjoy having and owning a vehicle. But I would argue that there really haven't been too many other alternative modes of transportation, especially for suburbs. I think that suburbs have been designed around the car. And so if you live outside of a city, but still pretty close to a city, so it's not rural, it's not like, you know, you might be stranded somewhere where no one's going to come across you for a while. If you're in the suburbs, you're conditioned to own a car. I think that this is the big thing, because when you start your life as someone who normally would have started driving a car, you're not going to own the car. You're going to be spending and budgeting for $50 a month. And then all of a sudden, I want to have kids. Does that mean that I want a car? Ooh, you know, we're going to need a car? Man, I haven't been paying for a car. You know, people who live at their parents' house don't pay rent. So when they start paying rent, they're like, holy crap, I'm losing so much to rent. They have to budget for that, and they're not used to it. It's kind of like in divorce settlements with, you know, million billionaires, and they're like, oh, but I have a certain lifestyle that I'm used to. It's going to be the same thing. And I think that a lot of it could be factored in to, you know, pay to a certain extent, where it's like, we know that you can, you know, it's only going to cost you 50
Yeah, go ahead. I think that Elon wants to get us to a sustainable transportation future, and that's his mission. And so getting the car to be a more efficient means of transportation is his goal. So you're owning a car is way less efficient than the robo-taxi network. And I think that's what he's going to look at the equation as. Will he maybe cut off car ownership completely? Maybe not. But if he's trying to get to his goal of a planet that is 100% as efficient as possible in transportation, I think he's going to, at some point, cut us off from car ownership. Now, maybe some other car companies will pop up and take care of us. Maybe that's what's going to happen.
But maybe it's just going to be certain segments of the population that want to own a car. It might just be parents of young children. It might be that as soon as the child is capable enough, I don't know what age, let's say 13, 14, 15, 16, where you are going to be trusting them to walk around on their own, to maybe start driving on their own, they're definitely going to be taking cars places.
But to your point, you said the cars are not going to get more expensive. Yes, they are. If you want this car that's full self-driving for your kids, you're not only going to have to buy this $25,000 Model 2, you're going to have to pay $100,000 or more for full self-driving. Most people are not going to have that money.
And even if you are happy to drive the car yourself, or even if someone else offers a full self-driving option, as soon as we start to lose cars that are going to be on the road, like as soon as one car owned by Tesla or on the network can service five people, cars are going to start to disappear from the landscape. And by the landscape, I do mean physically there. Like, parking lots are going to start to become a little bit more empty. And it's going to be businesses and city planners are going to be going, we don't need to account for as much parking. And that could, you know, there could be a curve, a nice balanced curve that's, you know, parking lot, you know, parking spaces go down with the number of people who need parking. It's not going to be that. It's going to be jagged one way or another. It's going to be there's too many parking spaces, there's going to be too few. Mm-hmm. I think that it's at a certain point, it's going to be inconvenient to park your car. It's already inconvenient to park your car, let's be honest, especially if you need to go somewhere in a city. As soon as they start taking away parking spaces, the geographical areas in which the parking spaces are going to exist are going to be fewer and far further between.
And I just want to go to another point. We view regulators now as being the slow, clunky thing. Once regulators understand how much safer a robotaxi network is, they will stop allowing people to drive. Now, when is that year? I don't know, but it will happen. And when that happens, car ownership at that point is effectively dead.
And yeah, I mean, I think that also is up to debate in some ways. I think because, for example, you take a person in a rural area who lives on dirt roads and has a truck to give hay to his horses or something, and he needs to drive it and he needs to get into town or something, you might say, oh yeah, like he could use, you know, an autonomous driving vehicle, obviously. And sure, in the future, you know, everything will go autonomous. But I think there are a lot of cases, edge cases and things where it would stall regulators from completely banning, let's say, human driving cars in all situations. I could see that in urban areas, actually. I would agree. And that would be the transition right forward. I think overall, though, like I get the gist of what you guys are saying. And I agree on the aspect that robotaxis reducing their cost of ownership, reducing the cost of transportation, right, is hugely immense. Autonomous driving, like you put all these pieces together and you have a radical disruption with car ownership. Like that, I definitely agree with. I'm not going to deny right that.
And it doesn't have to be 100%. And there can't be holdouts and stalwarts and things that are going to be slowing stuff down. But it's snowball rolling down a hill. It'll get bigger, and it'll, you know, we will try to push for, you know, fully autonomous driving in as many places as we can as soon as we can get it, just for some of the safety aspects, just because the whole culture around cars is going to change when it's no longer there's a person driving this car who has a driver's license who's over the age of 16, and I know that with every single car on the road. What is it going to be like with people who have road rage when the only person inside a car might be a child, might be someone who wouldn't normally be able to drive a car, or people who aren't driving the car? So why are you mad at them?
Sure.
That it's going to change the culture, and I know it's not going to be clean. It's not going to be peanut buttery smooth. It's going to be chunky and messy and gross and awful, just like the rest of the world. All the time.
Yeah, what I actually envision more is, like, for example, like in the suburbs. I live in a place with maybe 100,000 to 200,000 people, and it's not a city. It's, you know, more of suburbs, and like the amount of parents with kids who use public transportation is probably 0.001%, if at most, if even that. Like literally, it's like probably just a handful in the whole city. Like very, very small numbers, and like the needs that parents have to have a lot of stuff in their car. It's another house in a sense, you know. And the robotaxi doesn't really meet that. I mean, I think what's a more likely transition, and there are a lot of areas like what I'm talking about, is I could see a transition from two car families to one car families. Like that makes a lot more sense, where there's maybe like the husband or the wife, whoever works, might be taking just, you know, a carpooled, you know, robotaxi to work and back. The mom might take, you know, the kids out and have, because it's like a second house in a sense for some of these families. And I think that's the more likely. I can see maybe half of car ownership go down in certain areas. I think in urban areas, you guys are spot on. I mean, I've lived in urban areas. I went to college like in Berkeley, and like I had no car for 4 years, and no one even thinks about driving a car, barely anyone, because it's just a pain. You know, you don't want a car. And I think the closer you are bent in an urban setting or city, then you, it's like, it's, you know, car ownership is dead. Basically, you know, right. Over time, it just makes no sense. But the further you are from urban settings, like the use cases and needs of owned car actually grow substantially. And that's where I see, like, there's always going to be, I think, a need for a person to have owned their car. And that's one of the main reasons why I think Tesla will continue to sell cars, because the need to own the car is always going to be there. And Tesla's
not in business for that. That's, right. I mean, that's what you have to keep in mind. They're not every other company in the world. I would agree with you. They're trying, if they can squeeze out one more donut to sell to you, they would. Elon doesn't care. I don't believe he needs us to fund him now. But the moment that he doesn't need that funding anymore, I think he'll go to his principals.
And I think that I agree with you about specifically younger children, parents. But I think that that window isn't as long lived as it feels like, probably, to be a parent of a younger person. You get through the hump, and pretty soon you have self-sufficient people who don't need tons of stuff. So I think that the time period for which a particular person would need to own that one car would be fairly small.
Well, and I also don't think we're picturing all of the sub-branches of things that will pop off from these new needs. So as new technology comes in, you have all sorts of new needs, right? You just mentioned you've got sporting stuff in your car. Why wouldn't there be some form of lockers with robots that would take care of this need and be able to transfer it from one robotaxi to another? Or things that would pop up where you're also renting your sporting equipment or renting your car seats. Like all of these things that we're kind of stuck with, like I have to own a car seat. Even that's stupid if you think about it, because we own tons of car seats, but they keep getting bigger. And so you keep needing more car seats. But we're just, there's no other alternative right now. So we're just like, of course, I have to buy a car seat.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to rent a car seat just because I know what happens on car seats. And I don't want some, you know, like other kids.
But that's the biggest argument we're getting about the car. People are like, I don't want to rent out my car. I don't want people farting in my car. That's just because that's what people have in their mind.
And let's talk about car seats. They're designed to be owned by a family who's going to use them for maybe 2-3 years.
Right.
And so they're built to be that's their life. Right. They're not made to be that easy to clean. I've never seen car seat that.
Well, actually, it could be kind of messy to clean. I want to actually talk about this issue.
But I mean, you could design a car seat that would be easier to clean, would last longer, but it would be way too expensive for anyone to buy and own for 3 years for your dumb kid, right? You want to splurge, but you're not willing to spend, you know, over multi-thousands of dollars for a car seat that's built to last and be easy to be cleaned. I'm just saying, as soon as we get into that realm, that becomes a market. Right?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, I mean, some of these things are, I think, theoretically possible, but there's also other factors like just hassle. You know, sure, I could rent sporting equipment, I could rent a stroller, I can rent, you know, car seat and all this stuff. And maybe like in 50 or 100 years, you know, everything might be rented, but there's still like,
so I just want to caution you, whenever you go to the 50 or 100 year thing, that's basically you're uncomfortableness is so bad that you're like, it won't happen in my lifetime, and you shove it off. I just urge you and your viewers, we're all going to go through this, and we could be completely wrong. Maybe these ideas will never happen because humans will never stand for it. But this has happened all throughout human history. We never thought we could have an industrial revolution where all of our stuff was made in factories. That just didn't make sense. And we would have had a lot of great reasons why we couldn't or shouldn't do that. But it happened.
A lot of them still hold up.
Yeah,
too.
But
right.
Okay, so I want to go back. Actually, this is interesting. Another interesting point of kind of like the future, because I agree in a lot of ways with when we think about the future, a lot of times we underestimate what the future will hold, right? But on the flip side, there's another side, which is like, for example, go back to 1998, 1999. Like, I remember the kind of the dawn of the realization of how big the internet will be. And the whole world, or at least the investing world, was tasting the internet and what it would be. And in a lot of ways, people didn't think it would take this long to get to where we're at back in 1999, 98. They really thought that like in 5 years, it would be over. Like the internet would just be like, you know, take over every field, every industry, everything, because it was just so dominant. And in a lot of ways, that theory in some essence was correct. It's the timing was off, meaning like, you know, a lot of those predictions and the futurist view haven't even come one-tenth to realization in the year 2020 after 20 years of time. Some of them may never come to realization, actually. But in other aspects, like it's come to realization in different ways. It's just the way the future rolls out oftentimes isn't what is theorized by people, you know, say 20 years ago. Of all, like, I was really into, you know, all of the futurists, all of the people, the thought leaders of the internet back at that time. And they were completely way off, like, you know, in terms of timing and actually how it turned off. And it's so difficult to predict the future in that sense. And so, I mean, there's both ways. There's a balance, I think, you know. We can't underestimate the pace of future change, but there are also certain, you know, realistic paths that this change will go through.
Sure. A lot of that, though, does depend on the rate of innovation of that field. And right now we're seeing, you know, about five disruptive technologies all coming together right about now. And that wasn't happening with the internet. That was basically one disruptive technology. So whenever you do get multiple disruptive technologies at the same time, and I agree with you, it depends on who's making those happen. It happens to be that Elon is making a lot of these happen. And that's just the unusual part.
Yeah, I mean, back actually in 1999, 1988, I mean, there was a ton of actually disruptive technologies. We're talking about like just the amount of like internet hardware and router switches and the ability to network, connect, and, you know, the whole internet and computing chips. I mean, there was like, I mean, in some ways it was like as intense, you know, in some ways.
Yeah, except that it wasn't energy and transportation and the fact that we have a need for climate change to do this even faster. So there's governments actually focusing on it. I don't know. I'm just, yeah, timelines are really hard to pick.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I don't think that anything is going to happen overnight, but I think that the rate of innovation of humankind is constantly changing, is constantly getting faster, and humans can't absorb exponential curves. So even though we're in the middle of one right now, and we've always been in one, it still just looks like, oh, it's just this, that, it's just a linear, slow ramp. Whereas it might be that we're at the inflection point and we're actually moving faster than we think.
I want to actually talk about this whole concept of the mission of Tesla. And I think we have some disagreements on in terms of whether the mission of Tesla will encourage Tesla to stop selling cars to the public or will encourage Tesla to continue to sell cars to the public. In my view, actually, I think the mission of Tesla encourages Tesla to keep on selling cars to the public. And the reason is because the mission of Tesla, you know, to accelerate the transition to sustainable energy, it's a mission that Elon knows very deeply that this isn't something that like one person or one company does. It's a partnership with people. And in a sense, like Elon's not going to do something that I think disenfranchises a large group of the people that he needs to make this mission a reality. And in that sense, like, and we might disagree on like, of course, the ownership aspect of cars too. But I think that since there's going to be, for the long foreseeable future, the need to own a car for a certain segment of the population, in my opinion, it's completely in Tesla's ethos to embrace that people, especially because they're existing customers as well, who will continue to, let's say, a group of them will continue to buy cars and need cars. And it's going to be, I think, a very large segment of the population that will continue to need cars in certain ways. And I don't think it inhibits the transition to sustainable energy, because at a certain point, let's say 10 years down the road, Tesla's making 20 million vehicles. They can scale, like, you know, let's say 50% per year if they're aggressive. And they get to a point where they could sell enough cars to people who want to buy cars, and they can deploy, right, enough cars on the networks. And in a way, it's like they can accelerate the advent of sustainable energy while doing both, basically. They can grow their robotaxi network extremely fast, as fast as they want, but they can also sell cars to the people they want. That, to me, is the ethos of Tesla. That's like the in a way, like, yeah, I mean,
that's your wishful. That's what you want to believe. It's not what the planet wants. And that's, and therefore I don't think it's what Elon wants. A billion cars on the planet is not what Elon wants or is really good for the planet. You're buying a car is a wasteful use of energy and resources. And so we're used to that, and there's no alternative at the moment. But when there is an alternative, I don't think that that's what he'll want. Now, maybe he'll still need to sell them to raise capital, or maybe he'll still be like, well, there's so many people that still need them, I'm going to sell them.
Well, and it could be that the model will just be different. It might be that instead of you buying a car, and it's, and instead of you ride hailing a car, you could subscribe to having a car for a certain period of time. And, you know, it'd be monthly. Right. And so you basically have the same car, kind of like a long-term rental.
Right.
But it would probably be cheaper. They could roll in the insurance, because basically you wouldn't be driving it. So Tesla could internalize the insurance. They're well on their way by already having insurance. So maybe for the years that you decide that you need a car to own, you could be subscribing to that. It's more expensive than ride hailing, which could be another thing that you subscribe to. Maybe it's I you know, have a certain number of miles every month, or I, you know, it doesn't matter. But you could have it for the period of time that you need it. And then when you say, hey, you know, why am I still paying for this? You know, the kids can go get their own, you know, Tesla ride hailing cars. We don't need this expense in our life anymore. Let's get rid of the subscription to the car.
I just also, you know, you pointed to suburbia and people who are fortunate enough to live in suburbia. There's a huge cost to living in suburbia. Many people are basically underwater on their mortgages. A large part of that cost is car ownership. It's a huge fraction of your, it's a large piece of the pie of your expenses every month. And so if you can reduce that down to whatever, $50 a month, that opens up people to have more choices about where they want to live and what they want to do. And so I'm just saying, you know, we're just, again, looking at through the lens of what we see now. It is very hard to see through the lens of change, because we think that change will have to be some futuristic sci-fi movie. And I'm just positing, what if it's not? What if it's actually within our lifetime?
Yeah, I mean, so I think it works both ways, meaning, like, you might say, for example, it's wishful thinking for me to say that a Tesla will still sell cars. But in some ways, I could say, on the flip side, it could be said, maybe it's wishful thinking for you to say that, oh, Tesla won't sell cars because it's going to be better for the planet. I think in some ways, it's a balance of not just what's possible, but what's also realistic, and what's, because it's very complicated, obviously, right? But I think in some ways to, and I think the point I'm making is, for Tesla to really get to this point where they're not going to sell any cars to the public, like, this is a radical change. I mean, I think we can all agree that this is a radical change to Tesla's business model,
wouldn't,
to their ethos, to customers.
Say, I'm just, right? But wouldn't you say it's a radical change to build a car with Falcon Wing doors? Or wouldn't you say it's a radical change, because that would never happen before, a radical change to have rockets that land, or to start a boring company?
Or just to start an electric car company.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying, Elon is not, he's a first principles guy. And so I'm just saying, let's go, if we want to understand how he thinks, let's go back to how he thinks, which is first principles. He does not think about it in terms of the way we normally think about it.
Actually, I would argue that Elon actually thinks there is going to be car ownership into the future, and that is it just, I don't know if I am recalling correctly, and maybe you or maybe one of our viewers can pitch in, but I thought I remember Elon saying that people will continue to own cars even after autonomous driving. Like, he sees car ownership as not going away completely.
Well, there is, I think, a transition period. Obviously, it's not going to be one day where, you know, a bunch of trucks are going to pull up and take your car out of the driveway and go crush it. There will be a pretty lengthy time frame where I think the car ownership will exist and people will be allowed to drive. I think that it could be a lengthy process, but Tesla might do it early. They have every reason to want to do it early, and if they have enough, competition or whatever that is still selling cars, they might say that's great for the people who need cars. You can go buy your BMW, Volkswagen, Daimler, conglomerated, car company car. Go right ahead, go buy the electric car, and then when you're sick of it, you know, I guess you're going to sell it. Or, you know, maybe they will do a subscription service or something that will meet the needs of certain people who, you know, feel that the need to own a car for longer periods of time. And there will be places where, yes, people are going to be driving cars and trucks for, you know, like you said, on the farm. Sure. I don't see any real downside if, you know, there's plenty of farm vehicles that aren't really allowed on public roads, although they are, they just drive very slowly and you drive around them. I do think that could happen, but I think that Elon can't really let on,
right,
that
all throughout his plans, he's had some public plans and then he's had some not so public plans. And I'm just positing that a lot of the plans that are coming up are probably not the public parts,
because it's going to be stuff that people really don't want to hear.
Right.
You know, it's really disconcerting and uncomfortable to think that, like, yeah, I'm buying a Model 3 right now. Like, I bought a Model 3 just a couple of years ago, and to think that, like, that's stupid, you know, like, that hurts my ego. That's what the heck? I just bought it, and to now think that, like, yeah, that's kind of dumb, and that's going to be pretty dumb in the future. It's kind of the same as the cell phones that I've had. You know, I pull them out of the drawer every once in a while, and I'm just like, turn them on, and of course, it barely stays awake, and I just go like, wow, was I a dope, you know, using this stupid thing. I think that we're going to look back in much the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, because, like, I've always been into the future. I'm always, you know, thinking 10, 20 years down the road. The thing is, like, I think in this specific case, I really think that the car ownership aspect is stronger than maybe what it appears. Like, for example, take Elon Musk, for example. 10 years from now, is Elon Musk going to own a car or not? And my answer is, for sure he's going to own a car. And the reason is, it's not because I don't understand future and where technology is headed. I completely get that. It's because the reality is, Elon has, what, 6 kids? He's got a security detail. And
he's super rich. He can totally afford that. And there will totally be the rich who are always going to own whatever vehicles they're traveling in.
Exactly.
I mean, they own planes.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, like, yeah, for Elon Musk to travel, he needs, like, a few, at least 2 or 3, 4 cars to handle all the people. And it needs to be the cars that he has, he owns. Like, it can't just be some random car off the street. And it's because of security, it's because of different, you know, things. Like this is just the reality, right? And
I don't understand that. Like, you're still stuck in right now. I don't see why in the future he couldn't call up 6 of whatever cars he needs to get
because,
to the airport.
Yeah, it's because of, for example, with the security detail, the security details need to know that the cars aren't, you know, are safe. Nothing's been planted, nothing smells weird, nothing is anything. Like, there's once you get up to that level of protecting, let's say someone like Elon Musk, one of the richest people in the world, there's a million things that have to happen that you can't do in a robotaxi car. Well, does that make sense?
I think that there will be car ownership in the future.
Right.
You can have your very expensive, fully autonomous self-driving car in the future. I think that that's completely legal. It's going to be very wealthy people who have them. think of the people who own the cars now that are sitting in the driveway that definitely cost over $100,000. Those people are all going to have full self-driving cars. They will own them. They will certainly want to keep them. I totally think that that will happen for a very long time. Further than 100 years, probably. There will always be the people who own the cars.
If you'll sell them too, sure.
If they'll, well, I think that there will be that market, for the rich people who own the cars. But for, I mean, planes are an excellent example. You can buy a plane now. It's not particularly practical. It's very expensive.
Right.
You generally, when you use a plane, you're using it also with a ton of other people, but you're kind of renting the plane. You're kind of ride sharing the plane.
I hope that conversation was helpful. If it was, please consider liking the video to help spread the word and subscribing to my channel for future updates. Part 3 of this series will be coming out tomorrow. I'll also release a link to the full conversation I had with Zach and Jesse in the video description of tomorrow's video. On my channel, we're looking at the world through various lenses, trying to get beneath the surface of things. All my YouTube videos are also available as an audio podcast, so you can just search for Dave Lee on Investing at your favorite podcast app. Also, I'm active on Twitter, and my handle is HeyDave7. I hope to see you in my next video. Thanks.